Chapter 15. Having thus given an account of the colony in general, and pretty much of my renegade Englishmen, I must say something of the Spaniards, who were the main body of the family, and in whose story there are some incidents also remarkable enough. I had a great many discourses with them about their circumstances, when they were among the savages. They told me readily, that they had no instances to give of their application or ingenuity in that country, that they were a poor, miserable, dejected handful of people, that even if means had been put into their hands, yet they had so abandoned themselves to despair, and were so sunk under the weight of their misfortune, that they thought of nothing but starving. One of them, a grave and sensible man, told me he was convinced they were in the wrong, that it was not the part of wise men to give themselves up to their misery, but always to take hold of the helps which reason offered, as well for present support as for future deliverance. He told me that grief was the most senseless, insignificant passion in the world, for that it regarded only things past, which were generally impossible to be recalled or to be remedied, but had no views of things to come, and had no share in anything that looked like deliverance, but rather added to the affliction than proposed a remedy. And upon this, he repeated a Spanish proverb, which, though I cannot repeat in the same words that he spoke it in, yet I remember I made it into an English proverb of my own, thus: "In trouble to be troubled is to have your trouble doubled." He then ran on in remarks upon all the little improvements I had made in my solitude, my unwearied application, as he called it, and how I had made a condition, which in its circumstances was at first much worse than theirs, a thousand times more happy than theirs was, even now when they were all together. He told me it was remarkable that Englishmen had a greater presence of mind in their distress than any people that ever he met with, that their unhappy nation and the Portuguese were the worst men in the world to struggle with misfortunes, for that their first step in dangers, after the common efforts were over, was to despair, lie down under it, and die, without rousing their thoughts up to proper remedies for escape. I told him their case and mine differed exceedingly, that they were cast upon the shore without necessaries, without supply of food, or present sustenance till they could provide for it, that, it was true, I had this further disadvantage and discomfort, that I was alone, but then the supplies I had providentially thrown into my hands, by the unexpected driving of the ship on the shore, was such a help as would have encouraged any creature in the world to have applied himself as I had done. "Saignier," says the Spaniard, "had we poor Spaniards been in your case, we should never have got half those things out of the ship, as you did. Nay," says he, "we should never have found means to have got a raft to carry them, or to have got the raft on shore without boat or sail. And how much less should we have done, if any of us had been alone?" Well, I desired him to obey his compliments, and go on with the history of their coming on shore, where they landed. He told me they unhappily landed at a place where there were people without provisions, whereas, had they had the common sense to put off to sea again, and gone to another island a little further, they had found provisions, though without people, there being an island that way, as they had been told, where there were provisions, though no people, that is to say, that the Spaniards of Trinidad had frequently been there, and had filled the island with goats and hogs at several times, where they had bred in such multitudes, and where turtle and sea fowls were in such plenty, that they could have been in no want of flesh, though they had found no bread. Whereas, here they were only sustained with a few roots and herbs, which they understood not, and which had no substance in them, and which the inhabitants gave them sparingly enough, and they could treat them no better, unless they would turn cannibals and eat men's flesh. They gave me an account how many ways they strove to civilize the savages they were with, and to teach them rational customs in the ordinary way of living, but in vain, and how they retorted upon them as unjust, that they who came there for assistance and support should attempt to set up for instructors to those that gave them food. intimating, it seems, that none should set up for the instructors of others, but those who could live without them. They gave me dismal accounts of the extremities they were driven to, how sometimes they were many days without any food at all, the island they were upon being inhabited by a sort of savages that lived more indolent, and for that reason were less supplied with the necessaries of life than they had reason to believe others were in the same part of the world, and yet they found that these savages were less ravenous and voracious than those who had better supplies of food. Also, they added, they could not but see with what demonstrations of wisdom and goodness the governing providence of God directs the events of things in this world, which, they said, appeared in their circumstances. For if, pressed by the hardships they were under, and the barrenness of the country where they were, they had searched after a better to live in, they had then been out of the way of the relief that happened to them by my means. They then gave me an account how the savages whom they lived amongst expected them to go out with them into their wars, and it was true that as they had firearms with them, had they not had the disaster to lose their ammunition, they could have been serviceable not only to their friends, but have made themselves terrible both to friends and enemies. But being without powder and shot, and yet in a condition that they could not in reason decline to go out with their landlords to their wars, so when they came into the field of battle they were in a worse condition than the savages themselves, for they had neither bows nor arrows, nor could they use those the savages gave them. So they could do nothing but stand still, and be wounded with arrows, till they came up to the teeth of the enemy. And then, indeed, the three halberds they had were of use to them, and they would often drive a whole little army before them with those halberds, and sharpened sticks put into the muzzles of their muskets. But for all this, they were sometimes surrounded with multitudes, and in great danger from their arrows, till at last they found the way to make themselves large targets of wood, which they covered with skins of wild beasts, whose names they knew not, and these covered them from the arrows of the savages. That, notwithstanding these, they were sometimes in great danger, and five of them were once knocked down together with the clubs of the savages, which was the time when one of them was taken prisoner, that is to say, the Spaniard whom I relieved. At first they thought he had been killed, but when they afterwards heard he was taken prisoner, they were under the greatest grief imaginable, and would willingly have all ventured their lives to have rescued him. They told me that, when they were so knocked down, the rest of their company rescued them, and stood over them fighting till they were come to themselves, all but him whom they thought had been dead. And then they made their way with their halberds and pieces, standing close together in a line, through a body of above 1,000 savages, beating down all that came in their way, got the victory over their enemies, but to their great sorrow, because it was with the loss of their friend, whom the other party finding alive, carried off with some others, as I gave an account before. They described, most affectionately, how they were surprised with joy at the return of their friend and companion in misery, who they thought had been devoured by wild beasts of the worst kind, wild men, and yet how more and more they were surprised with the account he gave them of his errand, and that there was a Christian in any place near, much more one that was able and had humanity enough to contribute to their deliverance. They described how they were astonished at the sight of the relief I sent them, and at the appearance of loaves of bread, things they had not seen since their coming to that miserable place, how often they crossed it, and blessed it as bread sent from heaven, and what a reviving cordial it was to their spirits to taste it, as also the other things I had sent for their supply. And, after all, they would have told me something of the joy they were in at the sight of a boat and pilots to carry them away to the person and place from whence all these new comforts came. But it was impossible to express it by words, for their excessive joy naturally driving them to unbecoming extravagances, they had no way to describe them, but by telling me they be ordered upon lunacy, having no way to give vent to their passion suitable to the sense that was upon them, that in some it worked one way and in some another, and that some of them, through a surprise of joy, would burst into tears, others be stark mad, and others immediately faint. This discourse extremely affected me, and called to my mind Friday's ecstasy, when he met his father, and the poor people's ecstasy, when I took them up at sea after their ship was on fire. The joy of the mate of the ship, when he found himself delivered in the place where he expected to perish, and my own joy, when, after 28 years captivity, I found a good ship ready to carry me to my own country. All these things made me more sensible of the relation of these poor men, and more affected with it. Having thus given a view of the state of things as I found them, I must relate the heads of what I did for these people, and the condition in which I left them. It was their opinion, and mine too, that they would be troubled no more with the savages, or if they were, they would be able to cut them off, if they were twice as many as before, so they had no concern about that. Then I entered into a serious discourse with the Spaniard, whom I call governor, about their stay in the island, for as I was not come to carry any of them off, so it would not be just to carry off some and leave others, who, perhaps, would be unwilling to stay, if their strength was diminished. On the other hand, I told them I came to establish them there, not to remove them, and then I let them know that I had brought with me relief of sundry kinds for them, that I had been at a great charge, to supply them with all things necessary, as well for their convenience as their defense, and that I had such and such particular persons with me, as well to increase, and recruit their number, as by the particular necessary employments which they were bred to, being artificers, to assist them in those things in which at present they were in want. They were all together, when I talked thus to them, and before I delivered to them the stores I had brought, I asked them, one by one, if they had entirely forgot and buried the first animosities that had been among them, and would shake hands with one another, and engage in a strict friendship and union of interest, that so there might be no more misunderstandings and jealousies. Will Atkins, with abundance of frankness and good humor, said they had met with affliction enough to make them all sober, and enemies enough to make them all friends, that, for his part, he would live and die with them, and was so far from designing anything against the Spaniards, that he owned they had done nothing to him, but what his own mad humor made necessary, and what he would have done, and perhaps worse, in their case, and that he would ask them pardon, if I desired it, for the foolish and brutish things he had done to them, and was very willing and desirous of living in terms of entire friendship and union with them, and would do anything that lay in his power to convince them of it. And as for going to England, he cared not if he did not go thither these 20 years. The Spaniards said they had, indeed, at first disarmed and excluded Will Atkins and his two countrymen for their ill conduct, as they had let me know, and they appealed to me for the necessity they were under to do so, but that Will Atkins had behaved himself so bravely in the great fight they had with the savages, and on several occasions since, and had showed himself so faithful to, and concerned for, the general interest of them all, that they had forgotten all that was past, and thought he merited as much to be trusted with arms, and supplied with necessaries as any of them, that they had testified their satisfaction in him, by committing the command to him next to the governor himself, and as they had entire confidence in him, and all his countrymen, so they acknowledged they had merited that confidence by all the methods that honest men could merit to be valued and trusted, and they most heartily embraced the occasion of giving me this assurance, that they would never have any interest separate from one another. Upon these frank and open declarations of friendship, we appointed the next day to dine all together, and, indeed, we made a splendid feast. I caused the ship's cook and his mate to come on shore and dress our dinner, and the old cook's mate we had on shore assisted. We brought on shore 6 pieces of good beef and 4 pieces of pork, out of the ship's provisions, with our punch bowl and materials to fill it. And in particular I gave them 10 bottles of French claret, and 10 bottles of English beer, things that neither the Spaniards nor the English had tasted for many years, and which it may be supposed they were very glad of. The Spaniards added to our feast 5 whole kids, which the cooks roasted, and 3 of them were sent, covered up close, on board the ship to the seamen, that they might feast on fresh meat from on shore, as we did with their salt meat from on board. After this feast, at which we were very innocently merry, I brought my cargo of goods, wherein, that there might be no dispute about dividing, I showed them, that there was a sufficiency for them all, desiring that they might all take an equal quantity, when made up, of the goods, that were for wearing. As, first, I distributed linen sufficient to make every one of them 4 shirts, and, at the Spaniards' request, afterwards made them up 6. These were exceeding comfortable to them, having been what they had long since forgot the use of, or what it was to wear them. I allotted the thin English stuffs, which I mentioned before, to make every one a light coat, like a frock, which I judged fittest for the heat of the season, cool and loose, and ordered that whenever they decayed, they should make more, as they thought fit, the like for pumps, shoes, stockings, hats, and see I cannot express what pleasure sat upon the countenances of all these poor men, when they saw the care I had taken of them, and how well I had furnished them. They told me I was a father to them, and that having such a correspondent as I was in so remote a part of the world, it would make them forget that they were left in a desolate place, and they all voluntarily engaged to me not to leave the place without my consent. Then I presented to them the people I had brought with me, particularly the tailor, the smith, and the 2 carpenters, all of them most necessary people, but, above all, my general artificer, than whom they could not name anything that was more useful to them, and the tailor, to show his concern for them, went to work immediately, and, with my leave, made them every one a shirt, the first thing he did. And, what was still more, he taught the women, not only how to sew and stitch, and use the needle, but made them assist to make the shirts for their husbands, and for all the rest. As to the carpenters, I scarce need mention how useful they were, for they took to pieces all my clumsy and handy things, and made clever convenient tables, stools, bedsteads, cupboards, lockers, shelves, and everything they wanted of that kind. But to let them see how nature made artificers at first, I carried the carpenters to see Will Atkins' basket house, as I called it, and they both owned they never saw an instance of such natural ingenuity before, nor anything so regular, and so handily built, at least of its kind. And one of them, when he saw it, after musing a good while, turning about to me, "I am sure," says he, "that man has no need of us. You need do nothing but give him tools." Then I brought them out all my store of tools, and gave every man a digging spade, a shovel, and a rake, for we had no barrows or plows, and to every separate place a pickaxe, a crow, a broad axe, and a saw, always appointing that as often as any were broken or worn out, they should be supplied without grudging out of the general stores that I left behind. Nails, staples, hinges, hammers, chisels, knives, scissors, and all sorts of ironwork, they had without reserve, as they required. For no man would take more than he wanted, and he must be a fool that would waste or spoil them on any account whatever. And for the use of the smith I left 2 tons of unwrought iron for a supply. My magazine of powder and arms which I brought them was such, even to profusion, that they could not but rejoice at them, for now they could march as I used to do, with a musket upon each shoulder, if there was occasion, and were able to fight 1,000 savages, if they had but some little advantages of situation, which also they... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.